Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to today's program. I'm Neil Stavem, Ryan Thomas there at the controls, and Grace Reif on the phones. Looking forward to today's program. Just looking at some of the things that are upcoming. For those that are around the Twin Cities area listening to Faith 900, part of our Faith Radio Network, there's a special Valentine's comedy night coming up with Mark Gunger. Ryan, are you familiar with Mark Gunger?
Yeah, he's funny.
Funny man. Laugh your way to a better marriage.
He might be funnier than you.
Maybe. He does have good lines, yes, so, and fairly provocative. But he's going to make us laugh out loud, and we've got some tickets that we're going to be giving away, and you can get information on our website, myfaithradio.com. So just if you're looking for a little humor. If this program doesn't provide enough humor for you, then that would be something more.
Which would be hard to believe, actually.
Actually, you know, the topic we've got before us is not really a laughing matter, and it's one that I wanted to revisit because when we talked with our guest Amy Simpson a few months ago, not long after her book came out, it just was challenging to hear her story and just to realize the significant needs in our country and in our communities and where the church is. Maybe missing an opportunity to be more effective in providing some help and hope. The book we're going to reference today is called Troubled Minds, Mental Illness, and the Church's Mission. And it's from University Press. And it is written by our guest today, Amy Simpson. Amy is a senior editor of Leadership Journal. She's part of the Christianity Today team there. Also serves as editor of Gifted for Leadership and is passionate about serving the church and its people through leadership, communication, and resources. Has written Into the Word, How to Get the Most from Your Bible, and this one from InterVarsity, Troubled Minds, Mental Illness, and the Church's Mission. By the way, we do have several copies to give away today. And this would be a great resource for you, maybe just not only for your own family, but something you could share with your church leadership and just be something that would be a great resource. So, Amy, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Thank you. I appreciate being here with you again.
Oh, in the book, you tell a bit about your story, and I'll probably invite you to do that again by way of just sort of setting this up. This book sort of came out of your, some work with the Leadership Journal, just doing some survey of churches, but it really provided a platform for you to tell maybe kind of a rather painful story about your own life experience.
Yeah, my interest and passion on this topic really start in my, like you said, my own experience, and that experience is in my family of origin. When I was growing up, my mom struggled with her mental health and actually turned out to be diagnosed with a serious mental illness called schizophrenia, which most of us have probably heard of, even if we don't completely understand what schizophrenia is or what it looks like. So I grew up really kind of in the shadow of mental illness and experienced a lot of what serious mental illness can do to a person and to a family, and also how mental illness is often responded to within the context of the church. My mom's illness was present when I was young, even before I was ever born, but it became much more serious when I was 14 and has continued to be a major challenge for my family in the decades since then to this day.
Probably to add to the story, too, of course, your father was a pastor at the time, too, right? So suddenly it's a pastor's wife with some challenges.
Yeah, my dad was a pastor for about 10 years when I was growing up, and my mom certainly exhibited symptoms of mental illness at that time, although no one recognized it, as far as I know, no one recognized it really for what it was. And these were times when it was less common to talk about mental illness even than it is today, and harder to recognize and treat. But when I was 14, one of the things I think that made my mom's illness become more severe was that my dad had actually left his pastoral position and was kind of in between jobs. We moved to a new place. We were living in poverty. My dad was not working. my older brother, who was the oldest sibling in our family, left home at that time. It graduated from high school. There was just a lot of transition and a lot of stress on my family at that time. And we all felt it, but we were all able to adjust to the new reality, except my mom, who really the stressful conditions caused her mental illness to become much more profound. At that point, my dad was not serving as a pastor. And then at that point, eventually it became clear that he was not going to be able to take on the responsibility of a pastoral position again, given his challenges at home and his need to really focus on helping his wife and his kids.
It's not something mental illness, not sort of thing we like to talk about. It's not sort of neat and simple and happy solutions always. Maybe just a sense of what you've discovered in terms of the extent of it. I think I just saw something in the World Magazine here just the other day, like, what, 7 million in the country, and about half of those not in treatment. I mean, that's pretty sobering.
Yeah, it really is. And it's interesting how shocking those statistics can sound to people. And they really surprised me when I first started looking into mental illness and understanding just how common it is, how frequently it affects people. But basically, if you look it up, you'll find that statistics show just over 25%, 26.2% of American adults are affected by a diagnosable mental disorder in any given year. So that means this year, about 25% of people 18 and over in this country will have some kind of mental illness. And like you said, only about half of those people actually receive treatment for their disorder. One of the reasons I think people are so surprised when they hear those statistics is because they tend to think, when they hear mental illness, they tend to think of disorders like schizophrenia and some of the more serious mental illnesses that we tend to see in movies and that we tend to have sort of sensationalized in our culture. But far more common are disorders like depression, major depression, anxiety disorders, some of the other disorders that are a lot more common and actually a little easier to hide in your everyday life. So there are far more people who are walking around day to day struggling with disorders like that than there are with the more serious forms of mental illness, although the number of people affected even by those more serious and rare disorders certainly is a large number as well, about 6% of the American adult population.
Love to have you join the conversation today. If you want to talk with Amy Simpson about the issue of mental illness, we're talking about her book, Troubled Minds, Mental Illness and the Church's Mission. And we've got some copies to give away. And again, it would be a wonderful resource for you. And you'll find it revealing and encouraging and hopeful. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number, 877-933-2484, if you'd like to queue up and get involved in the conversation. Amy, give me a sense of one of the questions, I guess, that is the book subtitled Mental Illness and the Church's Mission. So could the church in America be the leader in changing the way mental illness is treated and maybe show by example how to effectively minister to those affected? I mean, are we really equipped to deal with this issue?
My short answer is absolutely we are. And my longer answer has a few facets to it. One of those is where I don't believe we're equipped to do everything that's needed to be done in terms of treating or responding to mental health, and we need to recognize that. So some churches err on the side of believing they can handle everything and everything should be handled there within the church and that the pastor is equipped to help and, you know, we're just going to treat it as a spiritual issue. And I think that's a grave mistake that some churches make. And that's not what I'm advocating. But on the other hand, some churches make the mistake of sending everybody outside the church and saying, well, this is a problem for the professionals, so we're going to send you to a professional and then we've kind of done our job. The right approach is somewhere in the middle of that. And it is recognizing that the church really is well equipped to do a lot in this area and that we have a lot we can offer and we really can lead the way. But that's going to mean partnering with other people who do have the professional training and qualifications and some of those medically based and psychologically based resources that they can use to help the people within our congregations and maybe outside our congregations who we want to reach out to. But the church has a lot to offer as well. And one of the reasons I believe the church can and should lead the way on this is because of looking at our history, even just the history of And this is one of the things that I describe in the book, Troubled Minds, the history of the response to mental illness within Western civilization. It really goes back to ancient Greece and Rome and the rise of Christianity within that culture. With that development and growth of Christianity came the establishment of hospitals and even specifically hospitals to care for patients who had mental illness. And this was a foreign concept at the time in that pagan culture. This was something that they didn't do. This was really a Jewish and a Christian idea that we care for people who are sick. And then going from there, you know, throughout the history of this offering this kind of treatment, Christians have led the way all along. They've led the way in providing treatment and care. They've led the way in calling for reform and insisting that people with mental illness be treated humanely, be treated as our fellow humans, our brothers and sisters who are also created and loved by God. So I believe that it's important for Christians and for the church to recognize that we have a mental health care system that is it's limited in several ways. It's limited by the law. It's limited by the lack of funding. It's limited by its own cross purposes. And these limitations in the system leave a lot of gaps in care. And the church is very well equipped to step in and fill some of those gaps. A couple of the things that we can provide that spiritual care for people that the system does not necessarily provide. And we can provide loving community. So if we do nothing else, we can make sure that people's spiritual needs are met, that their spiritual questions are addressed, because there are a lot of spiritual questions that come up in relationship to mental illness. Mental illness can present a crisis of many kinds, including a spiritual crisis. And then we can make sure that people who are struggling with mental illness, not just their own, but the mental illness of a family member, are surrounded by a loving community, by people who love them, who are insisting on continuing to be their friends, who are not going to turn away or reject them just because they have a mental illness that they're dealing with. And if nothing else, those two things would make an enormous difference in the experience that people have when they're affected by mental illness.
I wonder if you can maybe just expand a little bit more on the, you sort of talked about the two ends of the continuum. One is that, well, this is just a completely spiritual issue, and the other side is, well, we'll just refer out to professionals. But it seems like if we just decide this is a spiritual issue, that creates a whole set of challenges for those that are enduring, you know, the individual plus the families.
Oh, it absolutely does. And, you know, it's amazing to me that I continue to hear so many stories from people, because people share their own personal stories with me. And I just continue to hear story after story about how people have gone to the church for help. And they've been told things like, you don't have a mental illness. There's no such thing as mental illness. You have a spiritual problem. You need to pray more. You need to have more faith, and this will just go away. And that kind of response, from my perspective, is really the work of what the Pharisees did to people in New Testament times when Jesus was walking on this earth. And he had strong words of condemnation for the Pharisees and for people like them who laid religious burdens on people and insisted that if only you were a better follower, if only you were more religious, you wouldn't have these problems. You'd be more acceptable to God. God would love you more, and he wouldn't allow you to suffer this way. And that's just, it's simply not true, and it's not consistent at all with Christian theology. But it's so commonly taught within our churches, maybe not overtly, but certainly by default in some of the responses that people have to mental illness. So we just increase the religious burden that we're laying on people, and then many times people are told, you know, we'll have a special prayer meeting, we'll pray this away, or, you know, you read your Bible more, you have more faith, or maybe we'll go ahead and try to cast out a demon, that kind of thing. And when that sort of response does not work for people, often they are left very much disillusioned with the church and disillusioned with God. And sometimes people walk away from the church, and they walk away from faith because they realize, the church doesn't have an answer for this. They don't have anything that they can do to help me. And they're telling me one thing, and now I went to my psychiatrist and I got some medication, and that medication helped me and it relieved my suffering. But my church told me that it was of the devil, you know. So there's this huge disconnect when we start teaching that kind of thing to people. There's a disconnect between that theology and what people actually experience and what turns out to help them. So that kind of what I believe is false teaching related to mental illness can be responsible for people actually losing their faith, not just in the church, but in Christ himself.
We're talking about the book Troubled Minds, Mental Illness and the Church's Mission. That's the title of the book from Amy Simpson. It's published by University Press. We've got several copies to give away. And we'll get to your calls and questions, comments here in just a moment. 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Amy Simpson has been working in publishing, Christian media, and ministry for a number of years, part of the media group of Christianity Today. She's currently senior editor of Leadership Journal and served in a number of capacities there and has written this wonderful resource called Troubled Minds. And we'll get to more in just a moment. Stay tuned to Connecting Faith.
I like you.
No, I like you.
No, I really like you.
I liked you first.
As you can see, at Faith Radio, we really like our friends on Facebook.
And we hope to connect with you there soon.
Find us when you search My Faith Radio on Facebook.
Or just browse to Facebook.com/My Faith Radio.
It's connecting faith to your everyday life
right in your Facebook newsfeed.
We look forward to your like.
My Faith Radio on Facebook.
Distractions and divisions. Those are two obstacles guaranteed to derail our walk with God. Wednesday on Truth for Life, Alistair Begg opens our eyes to issues and personalities that can take us down the wrong road. How to steer clear Wednesday on Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Tune in Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. on Faith Radio.
Bring some encouragement today to the issue of mental illness and how the church is uniquely poised to play a key role in providing the help and hope that we are called to give as followers of Christ and the grace that God has bestowed on us we can share with others. We're talking with Amy Simpson today, author of the book Troubled Minds, Mental Illness and the Church's Mission. She's senior editor of Leadership Journal, been with CT for a number of years in a variety of positions. And we've got several folks that want to talk about it. We're going to talk a little bit about limitations and cross-purposes kind of the system in a few minutes. But let's jump in with go to line one. Jolene, thanks for waiting. You're on with Amy. Tell me about your comment today.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I suffer from social anxiety, social phobia, which makes it hard for me to go to church. I've had panic attacks and would have to get up and leave. And I don't think there's a lot of awareness on social anxiety. You don't really hear people talking about it.
Jolene, thanks for your call. Amy, is there talking about it in church? Are there some recommendations you have for actually even just addressing the issue from maybe from the pulpit or in other ways?
Yeah, I think this is one of the most important practical things that many churches can do that they're not doing now, and that is simply to talk about mental illness. And it can be helpful to try to educate people in the church on different forms of mental illness and what they're like and what treatments are and what hope there is for treatment, because many people, people who are affected by mental illness have never had more hope at their disposal, just medically speaking, than they do now. The medications and treatments and the understanding of the brain have come so far that there's far greater hope for treatment than there ever has been. So that's one thing that is important for people to understand. But even speaking theologically about mental illness, my pastor at my church is currently doing a series on suffering, and I'm I'm hoping that at some point during that series, he's actually going to mention mental illness. And it doesn't have to be a sermon about mental illness, although that's certainly helpful too, but just acknowledging that this is a form of suffering that people experience. This is a form of suffering that Christians experience, can go a long way toward destigmatizing it and giving people the sense that it's okay that you suffer from this. It's okay that you, to acknowledge that you have this experience within the church. Another thing is speaking about mental illness in our prayers and in our Bible studies and our classes, not necessarily, you know, calling out this such and such person needs help for their mental illness, but simply acknowledging, you know, we have people among us who are affected by different kinds of illness, different kinds of sickness, injuries, heart problems, ongoing conditions like diabetes. And we have people among us who are depressed, who have anxiety disorders, and let's pray for them. Just acknowledging mental illness in some churches would be revolutionary and would go a long way toward, again, sort of breaking that stigma and giving people permission to not have it all together all the time when they come to church.
Sort of ties in with Sherry's comment. Sherry's listening in Madison and Faith 1190. Sherry, you're on with Amy Simpson. Go ahead.
Hi. I just had shared that I struggle with depression, and, you know, it's treated, sometimes it's better and sometimes it isn't. And it was so helpful to me when one of the pastors shared that he struggled with depression and had gotten on medication and was getting counseling, and how much better he felt. And it was so helpful to me, because for a long time in the church, I felt like somehow I didn't measure up because I had this struggle.
Good word, Sherry. Thanks for the call. Amy, I'll give you a chance to reflect a bit on that.
Yeah, I think that's a great story. I'm so glad her pastor was open about that struggle. And, I mean, we all know that if we have something that's difficult in our lives, if we feel alone, it's 10 times more difficult than if we know that there's somebody else out there, maybe somebody very close to us who's walking through that with us or who's had that same experience. And with, you know, you look at the statistics, with just over 25% of American adults experiencing a mental illness in a given year, that's a lot of people. That means every one of us, including in our churches on Sunday mornings, are surrounded by other people who have had that experience as well, or who know somebody very close to them who's had that experience. But when we don't talk about it, this is one of the reasons I think talking about mental illness is so important. When we don't talk about it, we are left with the sense of isolation. We're alone, and we're the only ones who have experienced this. You know, I'm the only person sitting here on Sunday morning feeling like I don't measure up because I'm not happy right now. Jesus seems to be making everybody else happy, you know? So when we can talk about it and acknowledge those struggles and that it's possible to still be a Christian and have a chemical imbalance in your brain chemistry, it starts to break that sense of isolation and loneliness. And that in itself can go a long way toward people just experiencing ministry.
We've only got a couple of minutes before the break, but Amy, I'm guessing that it would have been helpful for you to be able to talk about it too, even as your experience as a young teen, when your mother was going through some of these challenges. You probably didn't talk at all, did you, about it?
I really didn't. I didn't ever talk with anybody. I didn't have, you know, any counseling or any kind of professional intervention until I was older. And I didn't have really any informal conversations or anyone I could go to kind of help me process. And at the time, I'm not sure that I recognized that I needed that necessarily, because I was very intent on staying quiet about what I was experiencing because of that sense of stigma and that sense of fear that if other people understood what my home life is like or how my mom acts sometimes, you know, they wouldn't want to be around me. They wouldn't like me. And in some cases, that's true. People do experience that kind of response when they start talking about an experience with mental illness. But in other cases, it's not. You know, there are a lot of people out there who can be very understanding on this issue and, again, may have gone through something similar themselves. And until we start opening up about our stories, we won't find one another. But it can be a very scary thing. Once you start breaking down those walls and connecting with someone else who's willing to listen compassionately to you, it goes a long way. It's a tremendous help.
Amy Simpson, Sharing about her story and the great resource in the book called Troubled Minds, Mental Illness and the Church's Missions from University Press. Got some copies to give away. Glad to have you in the discussion as well. You can call us at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. Or if you'd prefer to connect with us via email, go to our website, myfaithradio.com. Then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email link right there. We'll talk more with Amy in just a moment. Amy is passionate about serving the church and its people through leadership, communication, and resources. Is now senior editor of the Leadership Journal, and we'll talk more with Amy in just a moment. According to statistics, suggest that one in four people suffer from some kind of mental illness. And they may be friends and family members who bear the scars and anxious thoughts and are looking for a safe place to talk about that. We don't like to talk so much about mental illness. And we want to find out, is there a way the church can really lead by example in the way that it ministers to this part of our population? And we're talking about it with Amy Simpson today. Amy has been in Christian publishing and leadership for a number of years. She's currently senior editor of Leadership Journal, among other responsibilities with Christianity Today and their related ministries. She's written a book called Troubled Minds, Mental Illness, and the Church's Mission. It's published by University Press, and we have some copies to give away. And the number, by the way, for your calls, 877-933-2484. Let's take Dean's call right away, and we'll get into some other questions. Dean is listening in on Faith 1190 in Waterloo. Dean, you're on with Amy. Go ahead with your call.
Hi, Amy. Guys, thanks for taking my call. I just turned the radio on and just heard your discussion. It just really touched my heart because my family has been just devastated by mental illness over the years. My mom was diagnosed manic depressive bipolar. And she was hospitalized, in and out of the hospital many, many times. I mean, countless times, like between 15 and 20 times. And then both of my brothers, I'm going to choke up here, they both died. And as a result, partly of mental illness connected with chemical dependency. And I made a commitment to my little brother last May, when he was on his deathbed, that I would do something about it. And I think education is a great place to start. So I'm really looking forward to getting books and just learning how, as a follower of Christ, to help to address this devastating, devastating issue.
Dean, sorry about your loss, but thank you for sharing. And it's our hope that this program will be a start and some help, and you'll find the great help in the book. Amy, what are your thoughts, on maybe first steps or things, something that Dean could do?
Yeah, my heart goes out to you, Dean, and I think we've had probably some similar experiences, but I'm really sad to hear about your brothers and know that that's just a devastating loss and that you continue to experience the loss of your mom, I would think. My experience has been that mental illness means losing someone over and over, which is extremely difficult to live with. But I will say I can hear, the budding redemption in what he says and in his voice. And I can just testify to God's redemptive power. God is in the business of redemption, and nothing is beyond the reach of his redemption. He can redeem these painful experiences in our lives. And I have seen God do that in my own life and in my family's life. And that doesn't mean that it doesn't hurt anymore. It doesn't mean that it's, we have easy answers. Just means that he is, our pain is not, does not hold him back from being able to do his good work in and through us. One of the things that he mentioned, education, and I think one of the things that people like me and like Dean have is a responsibility to share our stories and to advocate for other people who maybe aren't at a place where they can find the courage to talk about their story, or they're not at a place where the person, their loved one, will really allow them to share their story. So I think we can speak up on behalf of those people and on behalf of our own loved ones, and just try to spread more accurate knowledge about mental illness and about the hope that that comes both through good, sound medical treatment and through through Christ and through spiritual care and through the hope that we have in Him. One of the things that I often recommend for people is a program that I really believe in and I would love to see grow. It's a support group program called Fresh Hope. And I'm not formally related with them in any way, but I just really believe in their program. And it's a Christian-based support group ministry that, again, I would love to see pop up in more churches around the country, providing hope and care for people who have mental illness as well as their loved ones, and encouraging people to understand that just because you have a mental illness does not mean your life is over. It doesn't mean your life doesn't have purpose or meaning anymore, but that you can live really well despite having a mental health diagnosis, and that can even become, you know, a positive part of your story. So that's just one recommendation I have actually for not only for Dean, but also for anyone listening who's interested in doing more, especially through the church, is to check out the program Fresh Hope, and their website is freshhope.us.
Good. Thank you, Amy. You know, if there was one thing it seems like that we probably all could advocate for is just the limitations and cross purposes of the system. I mean, you talk so clearly in the book about, I mean, the privacy laws, roadblocks, family. I mean, you know, you don't even know what kind of treatment your family's getting. You know, maybe they get a counselor and he or she talks with them 15 minutes and makes some diagnosis, and you're living with them 24/7. I mean, talk a little bit about the system and how sort of wacky it seems like it is.
Yeah, it really is. It can be an extremely difficult system to navigate. And anyone who's tried to walk through this system as a person with mental illness, or maybe even especially as a family member, knows what I'm talking about. It can be very hard to get access to care. We don't have enough mental health professionals, especially particularly psychiatrists in this country. So when you try to make an appointment with a psychiatrist, you know, for something like my medication isn't working, or I'm experiencing, you know, serious side effects from the medication, you might have to wait 6 weeks before you can get in to see that psychiatrist. So you're forced to try to find help somewhere else. For some people, that means going to the emergency room and kind of overburdening the emergency healthcare system, maybe getting treatment from someone who's not really qualified to offer that treatment. For some people, it means they turn to self-medication. They might turn to abusing substances to try to help ease their symptoms, and that just causes a whole other set of problems on top of what they're already dealing with. So that's, I mean, one problem is just the capacity of the system. But another is, like you mentioned, the privacy laws and the other sort of medical healthcare laws that we have in place in this country can cripple families who are trying to provide good ongoing care for a family member. For example, my family has really been impacted by this over the years. My mom, as I mentioned, has schizophrenia, so it's a very serious disorder. And when she is actively symptomatic, she usually exhibits some kind of paranoia, which is often directed first at her own family members. So that means if we take her in to get medical care, or if she's out in public and she obviously needs some kind of medical attention, she's not in a position to sign any kind of consent form, you know, to give doctors permission to speak with her family. She's not able to do that or to understand it, or she's just not in a place where she really trusts her family. She's not in a position necessarily to trust strangers either. But even in that situation, the burden of managing her health care is really in her own hands. And that's the way the law leaves it. So family members like us have, you know, we are forced to try to find workarounds around those laws to try to find out what is my loved one's diagnosis, what can I do to help support my loved one, because we can't speak directly to mental health care professionals unless the person who's actually a patient or a client signs that release of information form. And if that person refuses to do that for one reason or another, either because they're incapacitated or because they're, for example, paranoid, or because they're, you know, they don't want to acknowledge that they have a mental illness, that is going to require ongoing treatment, then family members are really left in the dark, and they don't know what. Often they don't know what their loved one is even diagnosed with. Even if they do, they don't understand what they can do to help, or even that this isn't maybe an ongoing issue or maybe a recurring issue. So it's very difficult to provide good care as a family member to someone under those conditions. Another problem is, you know, on the one hand, we have these cross purposes that I was talking about. On the one hand, we have this system that assumes that the person who has the mental health problem is capable of managing their ongoing care by themselves and really expects them to do that. And on the other hand, we have a system that's really designed, because its roots are in another era, it's really designed to provide stabilization and care for people who are not going to get any better. And that's just not the case with most people. Most people who receive some kind of treatment today for a mental health issue can and will get better. And they'll find, you know, they have the option of finding a way to live with their mental illness and to manage it in a way that may mean that they live a very productive life. But because the system is designed to simply try to sort of contain illness for people who aren't really going to get any better, we don't have many resources available that are designed to help people continue to grow and get better and live with their illness in a very healthy and productive way. We simply have facilities that are designed to kind of stabilize someone, give them medication, maybe point them to some resources and send them on their way. So we have these, like I said, these sort of competing goals that are rooted either in some misunderstandings, I think, in the legal, the legislative process, or kind of rooted in another era when we had less to offer in terms of medications and therapies that really worked for people and were able to change the chemistry of the brain in order to help someone live long-term with a condition that they could manage well.
Steph, so full of frustrations, it would seem like, for people at every part of this process. And I'm sure that, you know, whether you're in social work or whatever it is, that there's just a daily maybe grinding your teeth that we can't do more.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this is not a source of frustration only to people with mental illness and their families. It is a source of frustration to many mental health professionals, too, because they're overburdened, they're underfunded, and they're trying to provide care at a level that they're just not able to always provide because of these limitations of the system they work in. So, yeah, it is a system that really does not work efficiently and is very hard to navigate. And it's full of people who are doing the best they can and who have great intentions and who often go above and beyond in providing care. It's also, you know, I mean, I'll be honest, it's also got some practitioners who aren't necessarily great at what they do, too. So, you know, if you're looking for care for a loved one or for yourself, that can be a very daunting process, too, because you may not know where to go to find somebody who's really well qualified or who understands your particular condition or who's going to really connect with you as a person. And there aren't a lot of resources out there for that, either to sort of help people connect to exactly the kind of care they need that will really help them.
A lot of opportunities for the church to play a role, and we're talking about it today. Troubled Minds is the title of the book. Subtitle is Mental Illness and the Church's Mission. Amy Simpson is the author. She's a senior editor at Leadership Journal and has been in leadership and communications for a number of years working with Christianity Today, and also serves as editor of Gifted for Leadership and was providing some marriage and parenting content for todayschristianwoman.com and a number of things. We're going to take a short break and then come back and try and get through some of the calls that we have stacked up and just try and get to your questions or comments as we have time in the remaining 10, 15 minutes or so of the show. Glad to have you listening to today's Connecting Faith, and more with Amy Simpson in just a moment.
That feeling comes with a phone call you didn't expect.
That feeling as the news sinks in.
About the surprise diagnosis or the financial curveball. And in that moment, it's hard not to feel alone.
To wonder how you're going to deal with it all.
Be encouraged today. You don't have to go through it alone.
There's a whole community of friends ready to encourage you and pray for your situation. It's called PrayerWorks,
an online, completely anonymous source of inspiration and hope.
Find PrayerWorks at myfaithradio.com.
How would you describe Faith Radio?
It's inspiring.
It really challenges me.
It gives me that nudge I need in the right direction.
We'd be honored to hear why you'd listen and why you'd recommend Faith Radio to friends and loved ones. It's simple to share your story. Just call our Faith Line and leave a message with your story. The number is 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-93-FAITH. Then press 2 for the Faith Line. And thank you for sharing your story on the Faith Radio Faith Line. And he'll break open the sky.
Well, it's 47 past the hour. Talking today with Amy Simpson. She's authored a wonderful book. It's actually kind of a troubling book because as you read it, she shares a lot about her story. And every page you just go, it can't get any worse. And it kind of seems like it does. But she has told it honestly, and it's a wonderful resource. Troubled Minds, Mental Illness, and the Church's Mission. Got some friends that would like to talk with Amy, and we're going to try and kind of get through as many calls as we can. Let's start with line one, Linda. Is listening in Faith 900. Linda, go ahead. You're on with Amy Simpson.
Hi. I have a husband that I dearly love, and he grew up with a mother who was mentally ill from about the time he was around 10, schizophrenia with affective disorder, and he definitely bears scars of that. He was threatened. His life was threatened. His dad didn't hang out at home very much because it was too hard to be there, and so he was left alone with a very crazy person who basically, like, you know, just very violent and also kind of run through the streets naked, kind of, you know, crazy. And so he really bears a lot of scars from neglect and from a lot of things, and I would love to support him more, and I think your book would really help a lot. I'm just wondering if you have any practical things that have helped you in getting over some of the trauma of that.
That's a good question, Linda. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I will say, yeah, there are a few things that have helped me. And it's taken me a long time to come to a place where I feel I've healed enough to be able to speak on this topic and share my story in a redemptive way. I think I understand some of what you and your husband probably are experiencing. And there are a lot of other people out there like him who carry around that kind of pain. But for me, you know, it's not necessarily a matter of trying to make the pain of that go away. It's more a matter of bringing it, I think, to a manageable level and understanding it better. And allowing God to transform it into something that he can use in a positive way in my life. And the couple of things that have helped me to come to that point, one is honestly the love of my husband. And sounds like you said, you love your husband a lot. And that relationship, my relationship with my husband's been very healing for me, as he's been very consistent in his love for me and his patience with me and his listening ear, just allowing me to share with him my grief and my sorrow, especially as things have continued to be hard in my relationship with my mom. So that's one thing. Just rest assured that your relationship with him can be very healing for him. But I've also spent a lot of time seeing Christian counselors and talking with them about some of what I've experienced. And it's been very helpful for me to get their perspective on what I experienced, because sometimes making sense of something that you experienced when you were 10 years old or 15 years old or maybe even last year can be hard without the perspective of another person who can sort of interpret what you experience and help you understand. So, for example, it was a counselor who first helped me understand that I had gone through this process of grief and loss for my mom. You know, as I was describing the repeated hospitalizations and seeing, you know, seeing my mom taken away and then she would come back and learning to sort of how to live with her again. And that process, understanding that I had really lost something, which seems very obvious now, but no one had named that for me before. So I would really recommend that your husband talk to a counselor who can just help him understand his own experience and respond compassionately and help him sort of sort through his ongoing emotions and maybe even behavior patterns that have come out of his experience. He can also find help in a support group talking to other people who've experienced something similar, and he can find support groups like that through the National Alliance on Mental Illness. It's NAMI.org, NAMI, which has chapters all over the U.S. It's not a specifically Christian organization, but they certainly serve people who come from and have people in their organization who come from a Christian background. And then, as I mentioned earlier, FreshHope.us is a Christian-based support group program. Another one is the Mental Health Grace Alliance, which is another ministry that's specifically coming from a Christian perspective.
Let's try and get another call or two in. Paula is listening to Faith 1270. Paula, you're on with Amy. Go ahead.
Hi. I also, like you, had a mom who suffered a mental breakdown when I was very young. And one of my greatest fears growing up was that I was going to end up being like my mom. I don't know if you went through that or not. But then after a hysterectomy, I did end up being diagnosed with depression, and I started having panic attacks. So when I was diagnosed, I went through a real struggle. Am I going to turn out like my mom? One of the struggles that we have in our family, and I don't know if you dealt a lot with genetics, but we have certain family members who, you know, still look at depression as a spiritual problem. And so whenever I try to get my mom in to get her medication increased, I have this battle with the family that, no, we can, you know, if we just spend more time with her and talk to her, we can talk her out of it. And fortunately, she's in a nursing home now where they support me and have been very helpful to help me with the family situation. But I'm also concerned about my family because there's some depression in our family that has not been treated because of, you know, growing up with that feeling that it's a spiritual problem and not a mental problem.
Well, I'll let Amy respond here quickly and we'll get a chance to get some reaction to that.
Yeah, a couple things. I have experienced what you have, Paula, in terms of the fear that I would turn out like my mom or that I would start developing some of the same symptoms. And that's one of the things that a Christian counselor has really helped me with as well in making sense of that and kind of really stopping to taking my fear seriously and stopping to help me think through, is this true of you? And discovering that it's really not true of me. At the same time, you know, all of our brains are to some degree fragile and susceptible to illness and to injury. And I think that's one of the things that it's important for us to all recognize in helping to kind of bust that stigma against mental illness, that it's something that can happen to anyone, you know, a depressive episode even, or, you know, something that doesn't last very long, or something that is more longer lasting and chronic. But I hope that fear will not enslave you, but that it will maybe help to incentivize you to make sure that you're taking care of your own mental health, especially as you're taking care of your mom and helping her have the care she needs, that you're looking out for yourself too and making sure that you're getting what you need in order to be healthy and to stay healthy. And then, yeah, you know, I think it's very common to have family members disagree on whether mental illness is just a spiritual problem. And I don't have a great answer for that except to say to keep fighting on that issue and trying to help educate the rest of your family. I think that's often rooted in a misunderstanding about the brain. And for some reason, we just have a hard time sometimes recognizing that our brains are physical organs of our bodies. We think of them as something mysterious that we can't really understand. And there's a lot that is mysterious about our brains, but brain science has come a long way and can actually show us. If you look up PET scans online, you can see pictures of what a brain with mental illness looks like and what a normal brain looks like. You can see the differences in blood flow and chemistry through the brain. So maybe, you know, whatever you can do to try to help educate your family on the brain and the fact that it is a physical organ that can become sick, just like other organs in our bodies, maybe can help to demystify some of that.
Well, we won't have time to get to, I think, Christine's question, but she, basically she's saying his mother's bipolar. She tried to get counseling with her mom. Her mom doesn't want to. You have a 60-second response on that, Amy?
Yeah, I guess I'll just acknowledge that that's another common problem and one of the things that causes a tremendous amount of grief in a lot of families. So I don't have a great answer for how to convince your mom to get care, but I would say just watch for signs that she might pose a danger to herself or to someone else. And if you find yourself in that situation, it's always appropriate to call law enforcement, call the police and ask them to come help you with that situation and make sure everybody stays safe. And under that situation, police can actually make sure that that person gets into the hospital and gets some immediate care. And then, you know, your family can go from there. But that's a very difficult situation and probably one that I would recommend, again, that you go to a support group and see if there are other people in that group who can offer some advice around that specific illness.
Todd and Lorraine, we didn't get to your questions, but thank you. And Beth had offered a good note. She said when she had some postpartum depression, appreciated the verse from Psalm 40. He lifted me out of the miry pit. He turned to me, heard my cry, lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud mire, and set my feet on a rock, gave me a firm place to stand. Amy, was there a verse or something that maybe you have sort of hung on to time and again that seems to encourage you over and over?
Yeah, Romans 8:35-38 is a tremendous encouragement to me, and I found that it seems to connect with a lot of other people in this situation too. And that is the passage that talks about all of the things that cannot separate us from God's love. And mental illness is not specifically mentioned in that passage, but the way I look at it, if death itself and hell itself are not enough to make God walk away from us, not enough to separate us from his love, then mental illness certainly is not enough either. And while a lot of people feel alone or they wonder if God has abandoned them, if they experience mental illness or if they have a family member, a loved one who experiences mental illness, I always assure them, God has not walked away from you. He's not abandoned you. This is not an indication that he doesn't love you anymore. It's always exactly the opposite. God always loves us. He always sticks with us, and he always has a plan and a purpose for everyone, regardless of what illness we might be dealing with. So don't give up.
Amy, what a great discussion, and we so appreciate the work that you've done on this in the book and your willingness to share out of your life experience. The book is called Troubled Minds, Mental Illness, and the Church's Mission from InterVarsity Press. Recommended reading. Amy, Senior Editor, Leadership Journal, blessings to you. Thank you for joining us today on the program.